Good morning, Tucson. And this is Jump In Tucson, and you're listening to The Engagement Hour. I am your host, Ted Maxwell, and behind the glass, I have the infamous Matt Neely keeping us on time and target. The purpose of The Engagement Hour is to encourage all of you to get involved. We all often talked about the elections that we've got coming up and the responsibility we have as citizens to vote. But it's not just show up and vote, but it's also to be an informed voter, to learn what the ballot initiatives are about. But there are many ways you can serve this community. You can serve this community as a first responder. You can serve it through service in the United States military, as an educator, as a volunteer, as somebody who's involved in their community. And that's what we try to encourage today. So, Matt, I know you had a great show this morning, a lot of food. This studio absolutely smells incredibly delicious, and yeah. it was a light, airy conversation on Wake Up Tucson this morning.
It was, and I think there are a lot of hungry Tucsonans driving around making plans for lunch and dinner today.
Well, it was a great conversation with a lot of good business owners and Felipe Garcia, who does a great job promoting the city of Tucson. And today, our guest will be another individual of leadership inside the city of Tucson, and I really appreciate Tim Tamir joining us today. Tim was appointed as the mayor by the mayor and council to be the city manager of the city of Tucson on March 19th, 2024, and he officially began on July 1st. There's a lot of information about Tim's background, but we'll weed a lot of that out throughout the conversation today. And Tim, I understand you're on the live line with us, and you are ready to go. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning, Ted, and thanks for having me. You didn't warn me I'd be following Felipe Garcia, so I'll do my best to keep the energy up here.
Well, it's not only the energy Felipe brings to it today. He brought food, excitement, young business owners and entrepreneurs, and yeah, we've got a tough show to follow. There's no doubt about that, but I'm sure we can get there. I'm sure we can get there. I appreciate you being with me.
Absolutely.
So one of the things, you heard the intro to the show, and this is really about getting people engaged and involved, and I like to do that through storytelling of the guests that we have on the show. And you are now in the what I would call the most important and influential position on the city of Tucson's rather large staff that's continued to support the operations. But let's go back. I don't believe you grew up in Arizona. Is that a correct statement?
That's correct. Sorry about that. I'm originally from St. Louis, Missouri, so I'm one of the Midwestern transplants. I grew up, we moved around a bit, so I lived in Michigan, Illinois, New York. But my journey to this seat begins with, I went to high school and college in Champaign, Illinois, so I'm a Fighting Illini, and then moved to South Dakota for 8 years, and then came to Tucson in 1999.
So you got your degree from the University of Illinois in geography, but the way I was first introduced to you was with all the work and engagement involvement you've done in water. So can you kind of talk about what led you down that path to water? I believe you received a Master's of Water Resources Engineering degree eventually from the University of Arizona, but what led you down that path?
So all along, my interest was to be involved in the environment in some way. So when I graduated from geography, it was in physical and social geography. So it included geomorphology, which includes rivers and coastal and glacial geology as part of that curriculum. And I went to South Dakota for graduate school, where I started down the engineering path, but also really wanted to do work that impacted the environment in a positive way. So I actually became an environmental professional working in the mining industry, which is kind of sounds like an oxymoron, but my goal was to work environmental work from the inside. And so that's where my career started off. You cannot work in the environment without also having a strong nexus to water.
So you said you started your research or your graduate degree at South Dakota. Did you complete one there before you came to the University of Arizona, or what brought you to the University of Arizona?
So I did all my coursework, but I never finished my thesis at South Dakota School of Mines. When I moved to Arizona in 99, it was for family reasons and to make sure I had a strong continuing connection with my kids. I can unpack more of that story in a moment. But I never finished that degree in South Dakota, and then I ended up in Tucson and started, you know, pivoting my career into water issues more directly, but also decided that I wanted to get that degree just make a connection with the university here. So I started a brand new program at University of Arizona and got that master's in water resources engineering while I was working both for the city of Tucson in Tucson Water and ultimately as an engineering consultant for HDR engineering.
Well, I want to kind of unwind one other piece of that story so far, and that was the mining industry. So you went to work internally in the mining industry on environmental issues. Can you kind of talk about your background then? Because mining still is a discussion point we may hit later when we get down to talking the issues.
Sure. So in the Black Hills of South Dakota, you know, there's a various different mining activities, but one of the most famous and infamous is the gold mining that occurs outside of Lead and Deadwood, South Dakota. So it's in the northern Black Hills. It's beautiful country, and there's over 100-year history of mining and some great HBO dramas about life in Deadwood. But when I was there in the 90s, the 1990s as opposed to the 1890s, I guess, definitely a different atmosphere. And there were some large-scale gold and silver mines still operating. And I did environmental work where I did mine land reclamation, air quality, groundwater quality, surface water quality, all the monitoring and measuring and reporting to make sure that the mining activities being done by that company were done in compliance with the permits and rules. And so one of the biggest, you know, points of pride for me is the mine that I was at actually has now gone into closure. And during my time frame, you know, we were able to take it into closure without becoming a Superfund site, which doesn't sound like a high bar if you're truly an environmentalist, but it's not a bar that a lot of mines get over. I believe we had an impact there.
Well, I think that's actually a good posture to explain, because I think sometimes folks are so worried that if a mine exists nowadays, it's going to end up a Superfund site or go somewhere else. Have you seen advancements in mining responsibility in that industry?
So absolutely, there's advancements in responsibility. And so mining companies, for the most part, understand that the only thing that keeps them operating is their ability to actually do it in a responsible way. However, it also is also true at the same time that mining by itself is a destructive process. I mean, you're literally moving mountains when you're mining. And so the way it's approached, the level of responsibility and corporate responsibility and individual responsibility is far different than it was in the past. But that doesn't mean it doesn't come with impacts to the surrounding folks and environment. The key is there enough accountability there so that you can strike the right balance.
Well, Tim, I appreciate you sharing that point of view with me. The last thing I think you expected, because it's not what I pre-briefed you on, is that we'd be getting into issues in the first segment of the show. So what we're going to do here is take a quick break. And when we come back, what I want to talk to you about is, first, your experience with water and representing the city of Tucson throughout the state. You've done some big things in that issue. And then your move to become the city manager for the city of Tucson. So you're listening to 1030 Voice, trusted local news and talk, and we'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, and this is Jump In Tucson, the Engagement Hour. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. My guest today is Tucson City Manager Tim Tamir. Tim, I promise we're not going to go down on the issues yet. That's what we're going to save for our last half hour. But I do want to talk with you a little bit more about your experience in water. You've been very involved both locally and at the state level, including part of Governor Ducey's Arizona Governor Water Augmentation Innovation and Conservation Council. You were part of his Arizona Drought Contingency Plan Steering Committee, and you've recently served, continue to serve on the Arizona's Colorado River Reconsultation Committee. I'm actually on that committee, and I still can't get the name right. With all your experience, 30 years working in public sector, private sector, and consulting, you really had a way of trying to find some solutions on the waterfront, and that included leveraging the city of Tucson's potential for storing water. Can you kind of tell us what you think your highlights were, some of the things that you are most proud of being part of, trying to come to the solutions both for CAP and for water in Arizona?
I'd be glad to. I think some of the key outcomes, and it's been driven from both Tucson's positionality on water issues and the great work that's occurred here for decades, and the strong leadership from multiple mayors and council, including the current one, has put Tucson in a position where it does have a strong, reliable, sustainable water portfolio, which is great for Tucsonans, and it's also great for the region because it puts us in a relatively unique position. So I would highlight two main things. One is the emergence of recycled water or reclaimed water in Tucson starting in the early 80s, which definitely predates me by a decade or plus. But it is something that has continued to be a core part of Tucson's water ethic, is that all water has value, and the ability to recycle and safely reuse water is something we've been doing for a long time, and it's something we're going to continue to do into the future in new and exciting ways. And so that is one avenue where I emerged kind of on the state and national front, is through representing Tucson at the Water Reuse Association and even at some of the global water convenings, is to be able to tell that story about Tucson and its value of having a diverse water supply portfolio. It puts Tucson on the map. Tucson's always in the conversation. And so, and then that translates both from my roles at Tucson Water and my current role, but also in my consulting. I was 8 years in consulting, and for that firm, I was their water reuse practice lead for the company. So all of that experience dovetails into having that exposure, that presence, and then being able to actually drive outcomes in locally and in the state. And then the other one I would point to is the, you mentioned the Colorado River. Tucson wouldn't be what it is today without the Colorado River. We'd be really, really struggling to have a water supply here. We know that water supply is under threat because of climate change and drought. So when we, in the 2018-2019 timeframe, the Colorado River Basin came together and adopted what's called the Drought Contingency Plan. We could do a whole segment on Drought Contingency Plan, but the core of it is, in order for the Drought Contingency Plan to be enacted, the various basin states, especially California, Nevada, and Arizona, had to agree to voluntarily take some reductions in Colorado River water. Arizona is uniquely positioned that it has some of its water is the lowest priority. So that all could have fallen on Arizona and ultimately didn't because of willingness in California and Nevada to partner. But within Arizona, in order to get to an agreement, it had to go to our legislature. So in Nevada, all they needed was Southern Nevada Water Authority to say it's okay, and it's okay. And in California, Metropolitan Water District similarly. But in Arizona, because of our unique governance, we needed the Arizona State Legislature to adopt a deal. And in order for that deal to work, every stakeholder in Arizona had to be satisfied in some way. So the Tucson participated in a number of ways. And at the very end, one of the things we were able to do is shore up agricultural water use in Pinal County through our high priority water, but able to get some consideration for being willing to do that under the deeper drought conditions. I know I just threw a lot of words out at you, but at the end of the day, Tucson helped Pinal County get water, and in exchange, we also got some reform to our governance on recycled water that is benefiting the whole state and us locally. And that's kind of one of the like pinnacle achievements, that it's both Tucson's positionality, but also me being at the right table at the right time to be able to put a deal on the table that helped get everything done. So it's the work's never done. We're right back at that same table, as you know, discussing, you know, life after 2026. But those are kind of two of the key highlights.
Well, I agree with both those, Tim, because like I said, that was the first time we got to work together. I was representing Southern Arizona after the business community spoke loud about not being represented on the first DCP working group. And I was easily the least knowledgeable about water, but I understood the need to find compromise. And not everybody around that table was working that way. And I want to applaud you for what you came up with from the city of Tucson. You were able to get us to a point where there was compromise, there was give and take. And I think everybody as a whole benefited on that one. I would guess that a lot of what you did for Tucson Water and made progress caught the attention of the mayor and council very much. So in that meant in 2021, you became the assistant city manager underneath Michael Ortega. And now you've stepped into those shoes after he's one of the longest running, except for Joe Valdez, city managers of all time. What's the feeling like taking that role now, knowing how long Mike had been there and what he had accomplished?
It's exciting and challenging. And scary all at the same time, although mostly it's the exciting and challenging part. Mr. Ortega had to evolve how he was a city manager over his 9 years in the chair, because he came into a financially strapped organization that was facing multi $10 million deficits, and his job one was get to financial stability, which he accomplished within the first, the first budget he produced was stable. And he had to, work that for about 3 years to really reshape how the city operated and reshape how the financial picture and responsibility and accountability of the city functioned. And, it's like even like a football coach. A football coach comes in and you need a change agent. And sometimes they do that and they're really successful, but then can they make the pivot to being a different kind of leader? And that's what Mr. Ortega had to do, is he had to pivot, because once that was accomplished, now it's how do you take all of that and then do great things with it after you've kind of course corrected. And he was able to do that. And so there's certainly big shoes to fill there. One of the things that I take comfort in is that I was part of that journey. I was his second hire when he hired me as water director, and I was able to do the work there, but always with a lens of what does this mean citywide? Because when you're a director of a department, you take full responsibility for what happens there, even though you know you have partners and you feel like you should be able to share that responsibility. Intrinsically, you internalize it and you say, I'm going to do all the great things there. But that can lead to directors not paying attention to the bigger picture citywide and organization-wide. Mike certainly encouraged me to think that way, think differently. And then when COVID hit and our parks director left, he basically asked me to go and be the director of parks for while we did a recruitment. So I kept my water hat on, but I went and had the opportunity to be the parks director for 6 months. And, I'm fat, dumb, and happy thinking that was fun. And now I'm going to go back to water. Well, as soon as we had our new parks director start, my boss, Albert Elias, the assistant city manager at the time, announced his retirement. And Mike said, you know what? Maybe you're going to come on up here.
And I believe you also got another temporary assignment at one point running another division, or at least overseeing it, with when you went down and tried to help out with what was going on down in planning and developmental services.
That's true. So once I was an assistant city manager, so I might not go for the record of longest city manager, but I probably will hold the record of most department directors held. So I did a short stint over transportation and mobility as the assistant city manager when a vacancy occurred there. Sometimes you appoint one of the deputies to be the director, but in this case, Mike and I decided I'll just take oversight of transportation mobility for that period. Well, and that's actually the time period when we were putting Prop 411 together and getting the road package to the voters.
Tim, you've had a lot of experience, and when we get back from this hard break at the bottom, we're going to talk about a lot of the issues. We'll be right back.
Right.
Good morning and welcome back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. I'm Ted Maxwell. I'm the host for the Engagement Hour on Tuesday. Matt Neely's behind the glass, making sure that we stay both on time and on target. It's always appreciate everything you're doing back there, Matt. So our guest today is Tim Tamir. We've spent the first half hour, we actually got into some issues. I guess, Tim, you and I always, whenever we talk, we're always either debating or discussing issues, so it's hard to stay off them. But we kind of laid some ground background about your background, your experience, your expertise, the fact that you've had a lot of insight to a lot of the different roles. So it's not like you're walking in to the city manager's job blind and trying to figure something out. You've been a big part of this city thus far. So now, what would you say are the biggest issues you've got to deal with as you walk in?
Thanks, Ted. There's a lot of things happening in Tucson, many wonderful and some are not what we'd like to see in our community. So some of the bigger issues, we definitely have financial stability is going to be an ongoing conversation with the community, especially when we try to align our investments with what the community wants most. That is guided by the mayor and council, and then also informed by the voters when we put propositions in front of them about how they want investment in Tucson to go. Another major issue, and it's more of an internal one, is our employee development. For many years, the city did not really invest in its employees in terms of job training, career development, professional development. That's been changed in the last probably 5 years with definitely some resources allocated to that, some great programs led by our training and organizational development function. But there's a lot of work ahead. And one of the areas we're going to focus on is when we have staff who are progressing and showing high potential, and then they move into a leadership position, they move into a supervisory position. It's one day you're doing the work, and the next day you're supervising 20 people doing the work. And we don't still do a really robust training and preparation program for first-time supervisors. So that's going to be one of our key focal areas. And then, as a third one, I mean, there's a Christmas tree of challenges. But dealing with the housing affordability, unsheltered homelessness, and they're not the same thing, but there's a lot of intersection between unsheltered homelessness and the fentanyl public health crisis, opioids. So those are, a variety of things to deal with, and some internal, some external, but a lot of work to do.
Well, Tim, let's address that first issue. First off, I think it's a great idea. You've got to train and prepare your workers for multiple reasons. One, job satisfaction. One, for improving the job they're doing. And two, when it's time to take leaders and set people into leadership position, you've got to have people prepared. So I give you kudos for that. But let's talk specifically about the housing and affordable housing and the homelessness. You just announced your new assistant city manager, and Christine Swallow out of the Planning and Developmental Services Department is going to move up. And that has always been one of the departments that's always been looked at because of the need for more housing, for some, a lot of things that aren't in their control, but just the ability to permit and get things moving. So now that she's moving up to another leadership position, how are you going to backfill that position? And what do you believe the city and to some extent the staff needs to do to help solve and address some of the housing issues we've got in the community?
So Christina Swallow moving up is going to be positive for that impact. I know it's difficult because she won't be the day-to-day leader of Planning and Development Services, but in her tenure there, she's really driven a lot of the reform that's been focused on being a good business partner, accountability and transparency on the things that matter most to somebody who's trying to create housing. And in our case, we often, as staff, think in terms of volume. This is how many permits we're doing. But when you're on the business side of it, it's how fast am I getting my permits? And so she's helped flip those metrics around to say we're focusing on quality with speed and also reporting that out. So she created fast lanes for certain types of housing or certain types of projects that should be able to be permitted more quickly and reviewed. So she's already led a lot of that work. And so I've appointed Corin Manning, who was the deputy director, to be the interim director. And Corin has been working closely with, she's been with the city for a number of years, but she's had experience elsewhere, including in New York City. And she's a very fantastic professional and very highly capable. And working in partnership with Christina, she'll be able to continue to drive that reform. But I've also made sure that we've shown clear accountability of all of the departments that are involved in permitting, which includes Tucson Water, it includes Tucson Fire, it includes Transportation Mobility. So she oversees some of those departments, but not all of them. But when it comes to what flows through the Tucson Development Center, Christina has the con. She has the ability to drive that part of our business. So she's well regarded by colleagues in the business industry, including your SALC colleagues and SABA and MPA. I think it's been really well received that she's in that position. And so speed is key, but also she's leading some zoning and code reform for the city, which will it's really intended to break down barriers to getting density and housing into Tucson.
What would you say, Tim? What are some of the things you're looking about changing in the zoning coding? Because I agree with you completely. Until we address those sides of it, it's going to be very difficult to make some of the changes for some of the housing we want and we need in the community.
So it's always going to be striking a balance between the character of the community we have and then the types of height, density, and development that we need in order to be, the Tucson of the future. And so one of the sweet spots we feel is focusing on our major transportation corridors. And you're seeing some of it already around the university along Speedway. You see some of those, it's student housing high rises, but you're seeing heightened density there. We now have the Sunshine Mile overlay along Broadway, emerging out of downtown, where you're seeing some heightened density occurring there. But it also has to be sensitive to and compatible to the nature of the neighborhoods and barrios that surround those areas. But there's a great nexus between transportation, development, and housing, and mixed use in the form of commercial and business activity that Tucson is starting to embrace. And so that's one of the major initiatives, is how do we get those corridors activated in ways that make sense? So we're not saying density everywhere. We're saying density along the corridors where people are coming to work, live, and play, and retaining that, single family home nature of many of the neighborhoods and barrios.
So I think that those changes would dramatically help the community. And I think it's, like you said, it is a fine balance. It remains a balance between the community we have, the community we want, but also the community that we need to help others. You brought up the fentanyl and the homeless issue, and I know there's no silver bullet, so I'm not looking for that. But what would you, as the city manager, be recommending to the city on how to best address those issues? And again, no silver bullets, just what's top of your mind?
There's really two things in that space. One is the city and the county will always be partners in this space, because it is both a city matter and it's a public health matter. And the city doesn't need to recreate a city health department. We already have a fantastic health department. It's called the Pima County Health Department. And so that partnership will be key. And that partnership has a new funding source that exists today, which is lawsuit settlement dollars from the opioid, you know, manufacturers' settlements. So there's approximately $100 million over the next 18 years, really for combating the public health crisis. And the city had a choice of, do we take our share of the dollars and do our own thing, or do we partner with the county? But we're all in with the county on this. And so how do we take those resources and directly address the needs of the people who are suffering some substance abuse? That is one. And then the other is, how do we create enough investment to make sure that we are keeping our community safe and vibrant? And so we've put forward, I made a recommendation to the mayor and council, and last week they put it onto the ballot. So it'll give the voters a voice on whether they want additional investment in the areas of housing affordability, community safety, and public safety. And so that'll be a big decision point for the community to determine what kind of resources we're willing to put into these issues. But I'm comforted by the fact that we already have a nice new funding source for combating fentanyl and opioids. And we are doing what we can with our existing resources to align accountability and service providing to those who need those services. And then the question will be before the voters whether we want to increase that investment.
And that's the voice of City Manager Tim Tamir, and that is a perfect lead-in to a break. And when we get back, the City Manager and I will discuss that quality of life ballot measure that is going to be forwarded to the city voters in Tucson in March of 2025. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, Tucson. This is Jump in Tucson, and you're listening to the Engagement Hour. Make sure to tune in tomorrow morning, both for Wake Up Tucson in the morning to get all the blood flowing through the body as the issues will probably be addressed, and it won't be a lot of food and joy. So Chris will be back tomorrow to get you fired up again. And then please stay on at 9 o'clock to join Jump in Tucson with Grant Kruger, as he will be having Shane Barella, owner of the Scented Leaf Tea House, who just opened their third location on Tanca Verde, as his guest. So today I've got with me Tim Tamir and City Manager. That was a great lead-in for the topic of the quality of life ballot measure. It did last week get voted on to be put towards the ballot in March of 2025. So we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves talking about stuff when we've got a huge election this November. But I think this was an important one, and the city's considering it. And they want to put it to the voters. So can you kind of give your quick overview of what all is included in this half-cent or half-percent sales tax that's going to be put forward to the city voters?
Sure. The main overarching approach is to build on existing programs across community safety, housing, and public safety in order to take investment in Tucson forward to have even better outcomes. And so, as an example, over the last 3 years, 4 years, the mayor and council have initiated a number of programs to address unsheltered homelessness and other emerging issues in the city. And the funding for some of those programs is out of the general fund, but also it's taken advantage of ARPA dollars from the Biden-Harris administration and some of the increased availability of federal grant opportunities. These things include like our Housing First program, which is an evidence-based strategy to break down barriers to getting people into housing and get them stabilized so that they have a better opportunity to get into more stable long-term housing. Those and our community safety, health, and wellness programs, where we have care coordinators and navigators that previously they would rely on the 911 system to get what they needed. But what they needed wasn't always an emergency response from police or fire. Sometimes it was just help getting connected to some resources or it might even be a, you know, some guidance on how to get some mental health services. And we were sending police and fire to deal with issues that really needed a different touch. So we've really been reforming that with Tucson Police, with Tucson Fire, and with our community safety, health, and wellness, and other folks. The question is, does the community want more of that and want that to continue and see those positive outcomes continue? Coupled with that is we also have some core needs in our operations and in public safety. We don't right now have a robust vehicle replacement program or apparatus replacement program. So we still have police driving, you know, 20-plus-year-old vehicles. We have a lot of calls that go with a fire engine or an ambulance. And we've been able to do one-time monies through Prop 101 and through general fund investments in order to keep those fleets alive and provide professional or personal protective equipment, things of that nature. But the question is, do the voters want to have that continue and have a stronger, more robust program moving forward? And then finally, there's a lot of technology that can help us be a safer community and also help our staff resources be more efficient, more effective, and safer. And so, you know, it's a lot of different investments, but they're all intersectional in how they support getting people what they need now and then getting people building their capacity to have fewer needs in the future.
All right. Appreciate that. I want everybody to know that if you want to see a good breakdown of this, I thought you did a really nice job in your slide deck that you presented to the mayor and council. And so if you go on the city's website and take a look at that, I mean, you'll be able to see the breakdown. To give an overall view of it, it's about an $80 million annual income that you would receive from this. Looks like about 50 of that million does go more towards police and fire, and then there are other issues. One of the things I think people will be concerned with is why are not the police and fire funds embedded in the general budget and instead have to go out for the half-cent sales tax. But could you kind of give us background on the case the city's making for the need to come forward for another half-cent city sales tax?
Sure. And I'll also add that there will be an even more in-depth explanation of everything. So it's on the ballot for March. The mayor and council still need to adopt what's called Truth in Taxation and the implementation plan. And so within the next month, or certainly before the end of October, there will be an additional set of documents that go into great detail of all of the different investments and how they'll function. But having said that, yes, the primary funding source for the police and fire operations in the city is the general fund. The general fund is healthy and was getting even healthier. However, there are two main issues that are confronting the city right now. One is the needs have outgrown what the general fund can provide. Even no matter how we distribute the general fund and all the things it needs to support, including our core charter services like police and fire, the needs of a modern Tucson exceed the revenues that come into the general fund. So that's one factor, and so that's really a conversation about level of service. If we are happy with the current level of service and additional investments not needed, then you know that's the level of service we'll have. I think there's a real valid question about, is that the level of service that Tucsonans want? So that they're going to be asked that. And then the other is there's been a significant reduction in the portion of state revenues that are actually locally generated tax dollars, but they go up to the state and then they're called state shared revenues. They come back to Tucson. That's been impacted by next year. It'll be at about $40 million a year reduction.
Well, that's the voice. Sorry, Tim, hate to do this, but we're running up against the end. And I told you this time would fly. We did not cover, I think, a lot of the stuff we would have loved to cover. I appreciate you being with me today. I appreciate your leadership at the city council and your engagement. You're involved. And I look forward to having you on again.
Thanks, Ted. I appreciated the conversation and looking forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you for listening and joining us today. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. The Gage Men are on 1030 The Voice. Remember to spend time with those you love. Have a great week.